You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Be the best and you got to pay a little price. Want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Jordan, we're back.
We're back.
We had a little bit of a break. You didn't get a break. You never get a break. The Rams won the Super Bowl. The parade was a couple days later. You're off to Indianapolis a couple days later. Come back. I drag you to this journalism convention where you drove all the way to Long Beach to help us out. Now you're back working. Now we're making you do a podcast. Well, welcome to your off season, Jordan. How's it going so far?
Ooh, it feels great to be here, man. Great to be here. as we started this podcast, I said, Rich, I'm fine. I am not unwell. I just sound like absolute shit. So apologies in advance to everybody, although this might be a Phoebe Buffay situation where I actually sound better with my voice all scratchy. I'll sing a rendition of Smelly Cat later just so we can maybe try to feel it out. Yeah, Rich, 3 weeks ago, the Rams won the Super Bowl.
What?
Has it really been that little of time? Because it feels like years at this point.
It actually does. Yeah, I was thinking about that. I couldn't even remember the last time that we did the podcast. But boy, that's life in the NFL, right? I mean, you're just on to the next thing. I mean, there really is no off season, which is certainly by design. That's exactly the way the NFL wants it, because the NFL always wants to stay in the limelight and have people like you continuing to work all off season long. So, Jordan, we got a ton of stuff to jump into here, and a lot of it is going to be based off of this story that you wrote that just got published Monday morning as we record here. Jordan was in Indianapolis at the combine for a few days, even though most of the Rams people were not, but still got some amazing insight from there. First of all, everybody needs to go check out this column, because it's like, I was trying to think of a good food metaphor, Jordan, because I know how much we like our food metaphors. I'm going to say it's like a New York deli sandwich. There's just so much meat in between the bread. It's not a lot of bread that you're going to discard. It's just full of pastrami and corned beef and all this good stuff. Yeah. So let's just start diving in, Jordan, because there's so much that's going on with the Rams right now. I even made a little list, and I mean, we can run down everything, right? Aaron Donald, what's going to happen there? Is he going to retire? Is he going to get a new contract? Matthew Stafford is going to come back, but is he going to get a contract extension? How long is it going to be? How much is it going to be worth? Odell Beckham Jr., Von Miller, are these guys going to be back? Joe Noteboom, what's going to happen if Andrew Whitworth retires and they need a left tackle? Sean McVay, we now found out he's committed to himself to coming back, which doesn't surprise anybody who listened to our last podcast, but that was confirmed over the past few days here. And then I think, finally, his staff of assistant coaches starting to take shape, a couple new hires confirmed over the past week, still a couple positions open that maybe filled internally or what have you. Jordan, oh my goodness.
So much.
Spin the roulette wheel here. I mean, what should we start talking about first? A lot of your column today was focused on Matthew Stafford. And I know as these things happen, some of it gets twisted out of context or gets pulled out of improper, you know, order. So maybe let's start there. What do we need to know about Matthew Stafford and this contract extension? Kind of what's the timeline here, and what should people loosely expect with some of these numbers?
Yes. So allow me to set the scene for you, because last week, so yes, I was in Indianapolis last week. As you guys know, because we've talked about it before, the combine is really unique in that there are reasons certainly to go, and a lot of people have built fantastic businesses out of covering the prospects themselves, where the Rams themselves are particularly concerned. For me, this was less about covering a team with a first or second round pick and who that might be, and much more about getting to know some of the assistants that were there, a lot of the scouts that were there, the medical staff was there, and basically going on recon missions, essentially, fact-finding missions, because there are a lot of people that you do see, agents for people that you cover, agents for people that are on other teams, coaches, executives, all of these conversations are happening right now in these rooms.
Can I just jump in? And because a lot of people, there was a great column on our website about the Starbucks at the Indianapolis, but people maybe don't understand what this is like. I mean, this is not everybody in one room. You're in a giant convention center, the Indianapolis Convention Center, and you are just, I don't know how many steps you put together over those days that you were there, but can you just kind of set that scene a little bit too, where, you know, you're just walking down hallways, or you're hanging out in hallways, you know, people walk by, you casually see them. I mean, what are those days like?
Yeah, some of it's like, oh, you set a meeting here and there with people who you usually are in constant contact with. And for me, that's a couple of agents, a couple of coaches here and elsewhere, and scouts and executives. But you're constantly moving. It's a big skyway system there. So everything is connected by these tunnels, or these above ground tunnels, which is delightful, by the way. And you can't avoid people, and they can't avoid you, probably more importantly. And you basically are just gathering intel the entire time. If you're doing it the way that I did, you choose which way you're going to do it. For me, I chose not to focus so much on the prospects. I thought it's probably too late in the year for me to ever catch up ever on the draft at this point. So for me, that'll be a learn as you go process, you know, in the next couple of weeks. But in terms of free agency, in terms of what's happening with the team I cover right now, from all of that type of perspective, this is fact finding. So you're running around. I think I average like 22,000 steps a day. But you're also, it's not just during the day. You show up really early, you stand in that same line that everyone else is, you know, you ordering coffee behind, you know, the Jam of the Vikings. And then you go and you kind of go about your day, and you meet people and you see people and you do interviews and all kinds of things. You catch people as they come off of Radio Row. I had a great conversation with Brandon Bean in that regard last week. And it was great catching up with him. I covered him for a while. He's doing a good job up in Buffalo. And it's just, you see people, you know, saw Brad Holmes, got to catch up with a lot of people. And then you eat something. And for us, it was cool because The Athletic scheduled a couple of dinners, and then you scheduled dinners with reporters who are your friends or executives. And then you go out again. But this time you're not in the convention center. You're roaming the streets of Indianapolis. And there's these centralized locations, restaurants and bars that everybody goes to. It's the watering hole where everyone goes to unwind. And it's a very casual setting where you learn and you meet people and ran into so many people through the course of the last week. And it's all for the purpose of gathering information and seeing people and saying, hey, man, it's been 2 years, man. Like, great to see you. And all kinds of stuff, but also, you know, gathering information and important information, because this is where so many of those conversations do happen. Now, the Rams, they do things differently, as we've covered. I've written about this extensively. They do not go to the combine. This is something that they sort of started in 2019 and carried through, no combine, obviously, in 2020, and then carried through 2020, this particular offseason. And they first of all, they're behind. It's a good problem for them to have. They won the Super Bowl. So Les Snead and Sean McVay and some of their assistant coaches stay behind. Some of their executives stay behind and get the rest of their offseason in order, essentially, because they've just been doing the business of winning a Super Bowl. But they also get sent this major just offload of data from the combine of these prospects. And they have their own ways of disseminating that data. And they don't value so much think some of the things that do take extra time away from them, some of the networking stuff. They have their networks. Someone asked me, wouldn't it be a worry that they're not talking about trades with people? And I'm like, well, they don't have an issue not being in person and making trades. I mean, that's how this last season happened, right? Like, they have virtual networks that they rely on and are in constant communication with. And they also have their own people gathering intel. If I'm able to gather intel, they're also sending people that specifically are there to gather intel on things that are happening. And I did run in, it was optional for assistant coaches to come. I did run into quite a few of them. Thomas Brown and Eric Henderson also were honored by the NFL. Thomas Brown won Running Backs Coach of the Year, and Eric Henderson won Defensive Line Coach of the Year. So it was necessary, too, that they go to accept those awards in front of the groups of their peers. And we'll get to some of the coaching staff stuff and the changes. But basically, it was an optional event for them to go to. Not optional is the medical staff. The medical staff was there for a week and a half, which is brutal, but wow. That's the most crucial aspect of the combine is gathering this data on the prospects that they then match and run through their own sort of algorithms and programming as it pertains to who these prospects are and how they're building them. And it's also not like the Rams aren't meeting with prospects. They are. They're talking to people. They're allowed a certain number of virtual visits. They, of course, have had their scouts out they're going to be going to pro days. They've been at schools and working those networks as well. So it's not like the Rams like don't care about the combine. What I would say, they don't care about sort of the time suck that can happen at the combine. Right. I will say, though, on the flip side, ran into Kevin O'Connell and their new staff, Wes Phillips, and a lot of those guys. That was super valuable for them to have that time because Kevin and Wes came in late, obviously being a part of the Super Bowl team. And there's a bonding period and a learning how to work in person with people period that happens, particularly when you're in a space like that that's extremely filled with just noise all the time. And so it was really, I do think that part of it is really important and was really important and something that they valued. I think Wes Phillips won an award too, but I didn't confirm that. But you had asked me about Matthew Stafford several minutes ago, but I just wanted to reemphasize, you guys, like this, it's insane. No city would ever do it better than Indianapolis because of the way that everything in the city is connected to each other. And nobody in the NFL wants it to move. There's a potential that it moves to LA or Dallas. There is no way. And I love dearly living in Los Angeles. You guys know this, but no city would do a combine the way that Indianapolis does a combine.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody'd have to relearn all the haunts. Like nobody would know where to go at night. Like they'd have to reestablish themselves in a new city. Yeah. You wouldn't know where's the new St. Elmo's. I mean, you'd have to figure that out in LA, but yeah, it's a great centralized location too. And everything right there, the convention center, the stadium being right across the street, you're right in downtown. It's easy access. Yeah. It's as long as it's not 25 degrees, which I don't think it was last year.
It was 60 degrees. It was balmy. It was wonderful out there.
Yeah.
Like no notes. Yeah. It was great. It was a great time. I cannot believe that I'm continuing to put my brain and my body through these types of things this late in the year, but at the same time, learned so much things that we can share now, things that I can use now, things that will become very helpful down the road. It just is a fascinating fact-finding mission. It's a little bit of sociology. It's a little bit of studying people and patterns. It's a lot of sleuthing and digging into things and cross-referencing. And when you see a report like the one that I had this morning, it is days and days and days of lots of conversations that you're cross-referencing off of each other to narrow it into what actually is real. And that's exactly what a lot of these GMs and assistants are doing right now.
Right. I was going to say it's the same kind of thing for them. It's not a matter of you're missing out on anything. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, sitting in a room going, okay, now it's time to talk about trades. You know, who do you want to give up? Yeah. Who do you want to give? Like, that's not really how it goes. I mean, those are conversations that go on constantly. It doesn't mean that just because everybody's in one place. But yeah, I mean, that's always a big play for networking too, especially when you talk about some of these assistant coaches. I mean, you start to make connections and things like that.
Yeah, at Prime 47, which is the main sort of haunt of everybody in the league during that time, it was very late, and Kevin O'Connell was trying to close his tab, and he couldn't because he kept getting approached and handed resumes. And someone with the Rams told me 2 years ago, or right when I joined, that the combine, they were kind of moving away from it, and in part, and the Senior Bowl and all that, and not because the events aren't valuable, but because Sean could not go anywhere because people would come up to him and try to get jobs, and they could be you know, high-ranking employees of other teams, and they would just be coming up to him. So Kevin mentioned that he had at one point gotten 600 resumes over the last 11 days.
Wow.
And this guy, as he's trying to close his tab, like positions himself in between Kevin and the bar and introduces himself. And you know what? And I appreciate that. I'm not knocking this guy at all. It was it was bold. And sometimes you just got to do what you got to do, especially these jobs are so rare. But he shakes Kevin O'Connell's hand and he goes, excuse my language. He goes, I would fucking die to work for you. And I was like, you know, I've witnessed it. I respect it. I'm just going to walk away. Right. Yeah. And, you know, Kevin handled it really gracefully and asked for his name and all of this stuff. And I'm sure that's an overwhelming situation. But that's when he said, you know, I've gotten about 600 resumes in the last 11 days. And it was insane. So I think when we talk about the concept of time management and what the time is going for, again, it is very valuable for that staff to all be together in one spot right now, in terms of where the Rams are at in their build and sort of what their priorities are, and also where they're drafting. Where they're drafting does have play a part in it as well. That would to them be more of sort of a social event, which they've deemed sort of unnecessary.
Yeah. Wow. What a story. That's a great story. I hope that works out for Tom Brady, too. I mean, that's a bold move for him to try that. But no. Oh, shoot. Did I say that out loud? No.
Sipping on his avocado juice with a little
strawberry
on the rim.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, between movie making. Maybe there's a little bit of pivot there. That's amazing insight. And sometimes I forget the people, you know, it's unless you've been there, you don't quite know what a scene it is. I remember the first year I went, it was just overwhelming. It was like, I don't even know where to go. I don't know. This place is so big. There's people everywhere. Where do I camp out? Where, you know, how do I catch the most people? It's like fishing. Sometimes you have to find the right spot and find out there was that corridor between the hotel and the convention center where you go, okay, everybody's going to walk through here. So you kind of camp out there for a little bit, or maybe you go where they're doing the testing because you know everybody's sitting there watching. And it's a very, like you said, it's a sociological experiment too in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you have to just be okay with shamelessly lurking, which I have no qualms about. So it's like heaven for me. I just get to go gather it, be a detective, gather information and have no qualms about just lurking, you know?
Lurking, yes. Well,
I'm a lurker.
Awesome. Yes. Well, look, it all paid off, like we said, in this gigantic notes column that's just chock full of stuff.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's, you know, because it is out there and we want to make sure that it's out there accurately.
Yes, thank you.
You know, we've been talking for a while, ever since the trade, really, with Matthew Stafford about how, yes, the contract was coming up, but from the earliest hours, really, the Rams had been looking at doing an extension. And it looks like that's kind of coming to pass very soon here. It would, I think, would probably be surprising if it didn't at this point. So where are we there, Jordan? And what are kind of the implications here for the Rams? Because this is going to be a big, whatever the number is, and we can, I'm sure you're going to go into some detail about that, but whatever the number is, it's going to be significant. And it's going to have an impact on the rest of the salary cap situation. So what's the situation there right now?
Yeah, it's a priority, but I also didn't get the sense that they're in a rush. And part of that, I think, is there is going to be such an interesting ripple effect with how quarterbacks are paid. The market sort of got reset a little bit in the last couple of seasons with guys like Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes getting their deals done. And, you know, I probably wouldn't place Matthew in that like up and coming 10-year you know, extension conversation at all. But he did just win a Super Bowl. The Rams would like him around longer term. We'll get to it in a minute, but there's also some ramifications for the length of the contract as it pertains to Sean McVay and his future and the decisions that he makes. So something that they very much have as a priority to get done. It's just not necessarily, I don't think that they're rushing on it because there are other guys, Derek Carr and Kirk Cousins. And sometimes you want to see, and Aaron Rodgers wants more money, and you want to see kind of where those situations are at fully before you maybe make any moves, because you don't want to then reset a new market, right? Like you want to be, if you're the team, you want to get it done. And obviously I think he'll be paid very well, but you also don't want to sit there and say record setting money. And then that becomes the new baseline for everybody else. And then sometimes that's fine. Sometimes then everyone else pays more and then you look like more team friendly. But in terms of how it works with your roster and your structure, you have to be very cognizant of that as well. So with Matthew, the range that I'm kept getting was at or under 35, between that and with a ceiling about $45 million per year. And I think that I would personally be surprised if it was that high. I think we're looking more realistically around 40. In terms of what we'll actually see when that number comes out. A lot of people told me that they would be shocked if it were under 40. That being said, there are some roster building parameters to think of here. And Matthew Stafford is certainly aware of those things. And his representation has done deals with Drew Brees in the past, for example, where there has been some wiggle room demanded by the quarterback in order for the rest of the roster to sort of stay the same. And the Rams have been clear about their hopes to run it back and all of these things. So I think that Matthew's own personality, where it's not like he's out here making demands. Like he's just not that kind of guy. He's just not going to sit there and pound the table for $45 million a year. Now his representation can certainly pitch that as a high point, and the Rams work with, you know, they'll pitch a low number and then they'll kind of work from there. And my sense is that the Rams would like to keep it, you know, very low, at or under $35 million, and probably would pitch the under, honestly, if we're thinking about kind of the money they've had tied up in quarterbacks in the past. And I think that it's going to be interesting what it ultimately does end up as. Now, our esteemed colleague, Vic Tafer, and then also our esteemed former colleague and still good friend, Vinny Bonsignor, they've been reporting Derek Carr at $40 million per year. I think that's probably around where you're looking at for Stafford. That being said, I don't think that is structured in a way that hurts the Rams. You can do a lot of different things. So the one kind of cool thing, I just kept getting this sort of similar commentary from everyone I talked to, whether it was a Ram source or a league source or an external source, it would always be, well, you know, something cool is going to happen with the money. Like they could do this, they could do that, they could do this. Oh, what if they tried this? Or what if they tried that? All kinds of different structuring hypotheses were presented. And I thought that was kind of cool because the Rams have kind of showed, and this is a lot of Kevin Demoff, Lestine, and Tony Pastores, they've showed that money is a real concept, but the way you pay people can be so varied and creative. And I think that is something that you're definitely going to see. So it might not look, the initial numbers of it might not look like what they really will be, but it's very, very interesting. So I think, you know, I would be surprised. I kind of echoed what other people were telling me. I agreed with the group of people that I surveyed that said, you know, would be really surprised if it were under 40. Now, that being said, Matthew Stafford could insert himself into things and say, hey, I know that this 10, you know, $5 million, $10 million in savings is going to go directly to somebody else. I know how because he's been vocal about studying the team build. And so we could do it this way for now. The timeline I also heard about a lot was 3-4 years. My sense is that the Rams might be leaning more toward the 3 versus the 4. Obviously, the representation for the player would want more security longer term. So I would imagine there's going to be some dialogue about 3 or 4. And you never know. Sean McVay himself could maybe insert himself and say, what about 2? Knowing that at some point he's going to be ready to take a break. And another overwhelming theme was how connected he and Matthew Stafford are and sort of their timelines lining up, because there is little belief that Sean McVay would walk away or take a break while Matthew Stafford is on this roster.
Yeah,
there's a lot,
Jordan. And yeah, like you kind of were saying there, you know, competing interests sometimes too. People have to remember that's you have a player, right? Even competing interest within a player, right? You look at Matthew Stafford and you say, well, of course he wants to make as much money as he can, but he also wants to have that roster the way that he wants it too. So there's a little bit of a give and take there. And then, you know, that puts some pressure on the agent side too, because the agents, like you just said, I mean, Matthew Stafford's agency working with Drew Brees, you're always looking to push that market up, right? And I dealt with this in hockey for a long time when I covered hockey. It's like you're always trying to push that ceiling a little bit higher for the top or even for the middle of the whatever group that is, whether in hockey, whether it's a top goalie or a top defenseman. In football, we're talking about a quarterback here. So it's nice to think that, oh, well, why doesn't everybody just get along? You know, we not me, right, guys? You know, just take, take less money for and stay with the Rams. Well, it's not always that simple. And it's you know, sometimes a player might even have that instinct also. And certainly an agent works for a player, but the agent has a bigger picture in mind sometimes of, hey, you know what? This is going to impact the next guy. This is going to impact the next generation by how these salaries. It's a little bit of a cold way to look at it, but it's also the reality. So you can't just sit there and expect, you know, Matthew Stafford to take $30 million because, you know, yay Rams, it's the right thing to do. You know, certainly there's a little bit of that, and he wants to come to a team that's going to have a good offense around him and a good defense around him, for that matter, to take another shot at the Super Bowl. But it's not quite that easy. So, wow, Jordan, these numbers. I mean, $40 million for Derek Carr. I mean, no offense, but my goodness. I mean, it's about reading that room, right? I mean, when you talk about the urgency, you usually don't want to be the first person to jump in the pool. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you don't want to be the last person either. So it's delicate to know kind of when is the time. Okay, when is that market set? When are we comfortable with it? When can we, you know, do it? It's got to be difficult.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. I think back to conversations that you and I had, and then that we had with people in the Rams building last year, when Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods' deals got done, where you thought this was, let's see, this was actually, oh my gosh, it was almost 2 years ago at this point, right? This was before they even made the trade. Yeah. And you looked at it within the context of Goff, right? And then the roster building, you're like, oh yeah, that's a really solid foundation. And Cooper Kupp, I think you can argue, is like vastly underpaid at this point. But the Rams, if you look at it from a salary structure point, like the Rams, they have that, a lot of that part, the weapons that a quarterback often would want. They've got that part sort of solidified and locked in. And it's not just Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods. It's also Van Jefferson. It's also Tyler Higbee. It's also Odell Beckham, who they are, I think, probably pretty confident. Sounds to me like they're pretty confident they'll be able to get something done with him. And he is also very, very eager to rejoin the Rams and really, I think, really found a piece, like just good, a piece of himself here that he wants to continue to explore. And certainly want, I think for the player, you want to also be rehabbing with the, you know, widely regarded the best training staff in the NFL. And then there's also a plan for him. They've laid it all out. Like, you return at this point, this time, and then you also then become sort of the boost that we needed from you this last year. That's why we acquired you, or that's why we signed you after you left Cleveland. And then you also sort of become this boost, fresh legs and whatnot down the back half of the season. But I think you look at the structure of these salaries and the money, even the high point, if we're looking at the high point of the money for Matthew Stafford, because of the way that you can navigate other parts of this roster, I think it's doable. And I am always for, you know, for me as on a personal human level, I'm always for players getting paid more money. I think that when we react to, even when players ask for money, I think that sometimes people react negatively to that, but really at the root of it, it's a reaction toward the cap. The cap is the structure in place that we are sort of, our brains are sort of taught to react against and to think, oh, that's set, so it must be right. In a perfect world, no cap, Stan Kroenke's like the richest guy, so pay everybody, right? And that's kind of how it is, how it will probably become for coaches now that these TV deals are so insane. That's what it will probably start looking like, or some of this NIL stuff that's happening. Like, it's all starting to move forward into being modernized. And I'm a little bit on a tangent, but I think that basically what I'm saying is, I think that for Matthew, it would actually be reaching across in the sense of wanting this to work for some defensive players. We'll get to Von Miller here in a minute. Matthew's got, I mean, I don't think if the Rams want to keep the O-linemen that are pending free agents, they will keep them. I don't think that there is any problem, any holdup. I think they're able to free up almost $70 million in cap space. I think that they are more than capable, regardless of how much they pay Matthew Stafford, of keeping whichever parts of their offense they'd like to keep intact, keeping that intact. On the other side, though, and also fitting it around the contract, that whatever the contract they give him, because again, I fully expect this to be creatively done. On the other side of it, though, I think that when Matthew's thinking about, or if he is, I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but if he is thinking about, okay, well, where, if I do take this savings, where does it go? I think you look directly at Von Miller. Aaron Donald, that exists in a vacuum. Aaron Donald's contract was, there was always going to be something, regardless of whether or not they won the Super Bowl this year, regardless of whether or not the retirement thing is happening. There was always a point in this contract where he's vastly underpaid for the level of player that he is. That's pretty much, when you are at his level, there is usually a point in the contract where that happens. That was going to be this year. The conversation just became a lot louder because of what they accomplished and because of those rumors about possible retirement and all that. So that contract sort of exists in a vacuum, right? What I think you're directly looking at is Von Miller. And Rich, I know you've been following this along with this as well. It's like Von Miller has been pretty publicly flirtatious, I think, with other teams, and that's fair. Again, like the player has every right and should drive up their market as much as they can. But I will say it's interesting within the context of what the Rams and league sources told me when they traded for him and sent in a massive amount of capital to do so with the expectation that this would be a longer term partnership.
Yeah. And that's, look, I think we mentioned this last episode too, and you just said it yourself, Jordan, at the end of the day, the players have to look out for themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's not a selfish thing. It's not anything like that, but they can't make decisions based on, you know, yay Rams, let's go do this again. Certainly that was, you know, I think I tweeted about that during the parade, like, please don't read too much in the comments that guys are making when they've been partying for the last 3 days and things like that. Yeah.
Also a good tip for the combine, by the way.
Yeah. Don't read too much into comments on night 5 of the combine, right? Everybody is a little bit loopy and exactly. But certainly, everybody's different, right? And Von Miller's at the point of his career where he got his Super Bowl ring again. And now what is he valuing? And that's really what you have to look at. What is he valuing at this point of his career and this point of his life? Does he want to go back to Denver? Is he happy in LA? Where does he feel like he's going to win? Is winning the most important thing right now? I don't know. All of these questions he has to answer for himself. And yeah, it's funny. Don't, please, folks, don't read too much into Instagram. I know it's this thing where it's like, oh, as soon as somebody posts something like, oh my goodness, what does this mean? I even saw it last week where like the Rams mascot posted something and everybody's like, what does this mean?
Rampage.
What are they talking about?
Shout out
like,
Rampage, a true delight to follow on Twitter, I will say.
Yes, yes. Rampage is awesome, yes. My friend. But it's like, please don't follow this. There's a lot of moving parts and it's going to change very quickly. But yeah, it's wild to think, Jordan, that the Rams are in this position because, like you said, they can create the space. They can be flexible enough to bring these guys back. The question that you have to ask yourself sometimes is that the right thing to do? And sometimes it's not. And I know run it back. Everybody's really excited about run it back. Sometimes it's best to not run it back. Sometimes it's best to take an honest look at yourself and say, what does this team need? The goal is to win the Super Bowl again. The goal is not to come back with the exact same roster. This team is going to look a little bit different if everybody's healthy. If, you know, Jordan Fuller comes back and is healthy, Robert Woods comes back and is healthy, depending on what happens at left tackle. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that in a minute. This is not the Super Bowl team. The team that what I mean is the team that played in the Super Bowl is not the same team that's going to be week one of the 2022 regular season. So you have to take an honest look at your roster and say, what's going to get us there? What's going to get us to having the best roster that we can have on week one of the 22 regular season? Keeping in mind also that Odell Beckham Jr. might be a nice boost to come back a few weeks into the season or something like that. So that's the only thing I would urge people to look at is don't just keep your sights set on like, oh my gosh, what can the Rams do to keep this all intact? Yes, I know that would be nice. And some of the players would really like that too, but you have to look at what makes sense. And if, you know, overpaying Von Miller, it costs you somebody else. If it costs you Joe Noteboom, then you probably don't want to do that. And these are the kind of, you know, machinations that they're going through right now and trying to figure all that out. And my goodness, what? Yeah. And here we are, the free agency period right around the corner, you know, right?
It's all happening. The wheel is rolling down the wheel of cheese and Greg Gaines are rolling down the hill and there's no stopping them. Yeah. But you know what, Rich? And two, I would say that Joe Noteboom becomes one of their, you know, pending an announcement from Andrew Whitworth. I do think that Joe Noteboom becomes quietly like their highest priority or yes, Joe Noteboom, but also that position in general. But I think you just can't, it's hard for on their side of it. I don't think they have as their leverage with Von Miller is probably a healthy salary and Aaron Donald and playing next to Aaron Donald and the potential of winning another ring. Those are all very good things. But in terms of the financial leverage, I do think that Von Miller has more. You know, Josina Anderson does a great job. She reported that there were up to six teams who are interested that have the cap space that would be really, really interested in bringing him back. It's kind of like, well, what does he want in at this point in his career? Yeah. Well, it wasn't his choice to come to the Rams in the first place.
Right.
It could well be his choice to stay there, depending on what the offer is. But I think that would be a huge loss if the Rams weren't able to keep him. I think that in the context of the trade itself, anytime you win a Super Bowl, it heals any questions you had about the moves you made and what it took to get there. But the Rams were very clear that they wanted to continue their partnership with Von Miller, even regardless of whether or not they won the Super Bowl, regardless of whether or not he was a monster down the stretch. And also an emotional leader who motivated, I think, Aaron Donald past even a certain point where he even knew was possible for himself. Because how do you even motivate that guy any further? But like reached a part of his mind that I think few people have been able to do. And also was a really good balancing figure for their defense, allowed them to do so many different things schematically that their defense evolved into and push. I think he made everybody around him from the coaches coaches, schematically to the players themselves, I think he made everybody around him better. That's so, so invaluable. And I think that context, that would be a huge loss. Regardless, I mean, you could make the argument because Vaughn was one of their most valuable players through the entire postseason stretch. You cannot argue that point. Where you can make the argument is, okay, well, were the, you know, 2 second round picks, or I forget now what it even was, second and third round picks, were they worth a Super Bowl? Well, anything's worth a Super Bowl.
Yes.
But the point, yeah, absolutely they were. But yeah. The point is, now we're in the context of that conversation. If they can't keep him, and I do believe they did have to push that initial amount forward onto the table because the Broncos then acquired his entire salary minus $800,000. That's the big difference here. Von Miller won a Super Bowl playing for a team he didn't choose on $800,000. And this time around, there's a choice here where you could be playing again for a Super Bowl for a team now that you choose. In this case, the Rams being very well set up, I think, to make another run at it. But now all of the other variables are in your control, right? So now what kinds of things do you do? But I do think, to your point, Joe Noteboom, I mean, the Rams have had to figure out things with Aaron and Matthew and Vaughn and Odell. And those are obviously the names that they went toward and pushed their chips in toward during this stretch of the season. But Joe Noteboom, Brian Allen, Austin Corbett, you know, all of these guys, Brandon Powell, I think should be a priority re-signing. It's not, it doesn't mean he has to get a huge amount of money. And by the way, I think it would be another player who Stafford would be motivated to try to get back because he loves that guy. But these guys, these are the guys, and I think starting with Joe Noteboom, Obo Okoronkwo, like I think should be a huge priority. Not because they'll pay him, an insane amount of money, but because he lends something to this group and he's a part of something important as you look at the entire picture, as you said.
The Robins, as Les Snead would say, right? You got to have the Robins. You got to have the Batmans. Got to have the Robins. I miss Les. I miss hearing from him. really important stuff. And Jordan, let's keep going on Noteboom because, like, I'm really curious here. And I swear to you, this is not me trying to stir the pot.
We haven't had a good pot stirring in a while. So
I am just genuinely curious, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot either, but I'm just genuinely curious what you think about this, just the way that the Rams have approached this left tackle situation, because Andrew, you know the reality is with Andrew Whitworth, right? As much as it might seem like it, or might not seem like it, he was going to retire at some point, okay? Like, and you knew that day was coming. It was probably going to be this year. It still probably is going to be this year, although we haven't had any official announcement. He keeps making noises in that direction that he's, probably going to be done. And that leaves the Rams in a position where they no longer have their stalwart left tackle, and they now also might not have the player who they drafted. What was that now? 4 years ago? Thinking that he might eventually be Andrew Whitworth's replacement, thinking at the time that Whitworth was probably only going to play another year or two, not another 4 years. And now you risk having Joe Noteboom walk away. Now, I guess you'd look at AJ Jackson as a possibility there. But now you're in a situation like you've just laid out, Jordan, where you're not only trying to do a Matthew Stafford contract, you're trying to do Aaron Donald's again, you're trying to bring back Odell Beckham, trying to bring back Von Miller, trying to bring back these other guys, Brandon Powell, Obo, all these other people. And oh, by the way, you have to figure out what you're doing at left tackle, which is a pretty important position. Do you get any sense of like why the Rams approached that the way that they did? I'm not going anywhere with this. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, did they want a year under Kevin Carberry to see like how this might look? Were they not sold on Joe Noteboom? Like why, I guess the question is, why did we get to this point right now where there's a lot of unanswered questions still at that position?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it was because Andrew Whitworth was so good for so long, and they couldn't, when they signed him, when they initially brought him in, 2017, I mean, they knew he would be good, but I mean, everyone was telling, everyone in Cincinnati was telling Andrew, that he was old.
Oh, and you were hoping you'd get a couple good years out of
him. Maybe. And also they were looking too for mentorship for Jared Goff, and Sean McVay was looking for that presence and that cornerstone guy. Andrew, of course, has been all of that, but he's been so much more than that on the field for them. And it's been really interesting because, you know, you draft Joe Noteboom is the guy you draft as the someday will take over. But then also you didn't expect your starting left tackle to be so good for so long. No. And you're not gonna cut him just for the sake of making room for the next guy, especially if the first guy is so elite and playing at such an elite level. And I think has gotten even better, like as he's gotten older, yeah. which is wild and something that most humans cannot possibly hope to even come close to achieving. But it's that part, I think that's really what it was. And they kind of now are in this position where Joe has known for a while that he would be the guy to take over if and when Andrew does retire. But now he's got the leverage of knowing how much he would be needed because now they, you know, they didn't extend him in-house. I might have argued even doing it early, they couldn't, obviously, with the shrunken cap and everything. And I think that kind of threw it off too, is maybe extending him, pulling like what they did with Cooper. Cooper has been really, really solid for them. They extended him, you know, maybe before they necessarily had to.
Right.
And then now they look like geniuses because he had the Triple Crown season, you know, but with Joe, I mean, and that's the other thing. It's just not part of the process. You usually would not extend a guy who doesn't play, who can play, but doesn't play, you know, while your starting left tackle still has time on his deal. So there really was almost no way to win the situation. But it's also hasn't been a problem that they've had until all of a sudden it becomes one, because now Joe Noteboom has leverage, and he also knows that if they don't extend him, they will have to probably bring somebody in, and you probably would have to pay that guy more than you would pay Joe Noteboom, because at that point, if you're parting with Joe Noteboom, your homegrown guy, agents see that, and that's just like sharks swimming around chum. Like that's you now know that a team needs to find somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I would also say too, because this team has taken some risks on its line that have paid off just in crazy ways that we probably couldn't have predicted. Right. I would say that now what I've learned personally is to not rule out, you know, a guy like Alaric Jackson, who, you know, one person told me could be a future, you know, starting left tackle for them at a certain point. Now, again, does that mean maybe you have Joe you try to do something for 2 years but then you're facing a similar problem, you know?
Right.
It's very complicated in that there's some overlap that they didn't expect and that you can't really plan for. You have to plan for the worst case or the contingency plan in that scenario, but the worst case never happened. In fact, they had the best case scenario.
Right.
And you can't plan for the best case scenario in this league. You always have to plan for the worst. And so now, you know, they're facing quite an interesting situation. I do think that Joe becomes a priority for them, but I also, if I'll say this, instead of overpaying a non Joe Noteboom left tackle, I could actually see them going with Alaric Jackson versus overpaying a non Joe Noteboom left tackle. Now, if you want to spice it up for Joe Noteboom a little bit, I think they have less of an issue with that, considering how he's developed and the role that they've sort of stuck him in and his relative freshness in terms of, you know, not having a lot of wear and tear on his body. He had the injuries, but in terms of, you know, not taking just sort of the brutal hits and all of that, I think you could spice it up for him a little bit. But if they don't, I would actually see them placing Alaric Jackson in that seemingly impossible situation versus overpaying a left tackle who they know you're never going to get another Andrew Whitworth.
Exactly. It certainly did not, and it speaks to how you can't plan. I mean, you can have ideas and you can have thoughts of how things might go, but they're never going to go according to plan. And the Rams never thought they would be here with Andrew Whitworth right now. I mean, if you told them this was the scenario, they would have done a backflip, you know, to say, oh, okay, yeah, you're going to be sitting here in 2022, and Andrew Whitworth is still going to be your left tackle, and you're going to be the Super Bowl champion. Americans. I think they would have taken that problem back in 2017, but it's certainly not what they expected. Like you said, Jordan, I mean, I was there, and that was not the expectation that this guy was still going to be here in 4 years playing at a high level. It does surprise me a little bit, just because in part, like you said, because they have been so proactive in these other areas that they didn't just, you know, try with Joe. And I shouldn't say they didn't try. That's the other thing on this. I don't know for sure that they didn't try. Maybe they did. But you know, trying to maybe get him for two more years just so you had something there, you know, just in case. So we'll see how that goes. I think a lot of this, Jordan, probably comes down to what is the market for Joe Noteboom out there? And that's a really hard question to answer when you talk about a guy who has never really found a full-time home at any particular position in the NFL. He's bounced around a little bit as needed, kind of that Swiss Army knife on that offensive line when different guys have gotten hurt or he's needed to fill in for a game or two. Only started two games this season and has started 17 total in 4 years. So what is that? How is that seen around the league of the 31 other teams? Do they see him as a guy who, hey, we're going to go sign this guy and we're going to plug him in as our left tackle? Do they value him more than the Rams do? Are they willing to pay him more than the Rams would? I mean, these are things that it's hard to, it's a great position for Joe Noteboom to be in because, you know.
Joe Banknote Boom, am I right?
great one. Love it. Yeah. So. Great.
We're going to get tweeted that one.
That's it for a minute. That was a good one.
I did to your question though. I did talk to a couple of team personnel people, not non-Rams, and also nobody freak out. The people that I spoke to, they are not in the market for a left tackle, so do not worry. But I will say that this came up, and this was a question that I had for them because of the position, what you call position flexibility. Now, again, you want to be careful doing that with your linemen, I think. But if you have a guy who can do that pretty seamlessly, the thing that sticks out to people is that stretch in 2020 when he took over for Andrew Whitworth at left tackle when Andrew was recovering from the knee injury. And, you know, it was so remarkable that he did return and played through that short postseason run that year that we kind of forgot about what a great job Joe Noteboom did during that time. And then he came in, he had an opportunity to come in and contribute in certain ways as well this year. And he looked solid doing it. And so I think that when I'm talking to these guys, it's like, well, no, you pay a guy more because he can do that. Sure, you'd love to just keep him at one position, but you pay him more because he can do that for you, and because it's on tape that he can do it well. And that's the thing. It's not just Joe and his agent going and saying, oh yeah, no, I can do this. This is what I did at practice every day. You're just going to have to take my word for it.
Right.
But it's the fact that is a proven body of work. His resume is out there. And I think, too, you're looking at teams who you even see it in the Super Bowl. Maybe you can get to the Super Bowl with a crap offensive line, but you can't break through. And it still is not proven that you can break through if your offensive line is just wildly inconsistent. And so the value of his position goes up. But I also especially this is a conversation that's happening. I mean, the fact that it's happening at the combine means that it's happening. And the leverage point then becomes too, well, yeah, you know, he has done this before. We've all seen it. Everybody's seen that he can move, and the injury history will scare, I think, some teams away, obviously. And it won't scare the Rams away because they know again, what we talked about a couple weeks ago, they measure every single piece of output that these guys do and have all of that data in house. So it won't necessarily scare them away. But you know, that position flexibility, even though it was born of necessity, is something that is very, very appealing. And I think of teams like Carolina. I think of teams who like Cincinnati. I think of teams who are trying to rebuild and need guys. They need more than one guy. And sure, if he can be your long-term left tackle, great. But they need guys. And so that is, I think, something that's very interesting. But I do think it does increase I think it increases his external market. With the Rams, it would be him playing left tackle, end all be all. That is the position that they will have him play. And so I think it doesn't maybe do a ton internally, but externally it certainly looks good.
Yeah. And look, I should say I feel like I should give myself some time in the penalty box, not talking about the Rams offensive line anymore, because they certainly proved me wrong over the last 12 months, and some of the decisions that I thought they were taking chances on ended up working out really well. And
still could really use a really promising young center who's cheap right about now. I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, maybe could have drafted one in the second round last year. I don't know. Gosh darn it! I just said I wasn't going to do it. Yeah, and then you're going to
have it. How about this? Oh, we're just going to do it. You know what? We're just going to do it. Fans wanted it. They've been asking for it. All right. How about this? You're bringing back Odell Beckham, who turns out to be just wonderful for you. Robert Woods is going to be healthy. You have Van Jefferson. Jacob Harris turned out to be really, really exciting before he got hurt. And you have Brandon Powell, who can be your kick and punt returner, and he actually better be. Otherwise, I really question the logic there.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do with Tutu Atwell? Where does he fit? So it's kind of like, all right, well, yeah, but you know, heard Creed Humphrey had a pretty good year. Just saying, just putting it out there. Brian Allen had a great year. I don't want to take anything away from him, but you might not be able to re-sign him.
Right. Yeah.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah. Maybe some of that DeSean Jackson money could have gone to one of these young guys too, to re-sign them. I don't know. Anyway, it worked out. They got the Super Bowl.
They won the Super Bowl. Yeah.
What are you going to complain about?
They were pretty good. They had a pretty good year.
Yeah, it was okay. They'll take it. Jordan, before we wrap up, I do want to talk about some of the assistant coaching changes there. Is there anything else? I feel like I literally had this note card that I'm showing Jordan on Zoom here of all the things I wanted to run down. Did we miss anything big from the combine other than stuff we want to talk about with the staff?
I did think it was interesting. The Rams kind of looked like they guessed correctly, I think. Well, it wasn't a guess, obviously, but a lot of the players, the way it was scheduled, the thing that's frustrating with the combine is they don't schedule it to be beneficial at all to players. And so a lot of these workouts for some of these guys were scheduled like right after really stressful, like one-on-one periods or individual workouts. And they would have these testing numbers that you have to produce right after something else. And so I think a lot of players, like the entire running backs group as a whole, most of the receivers are not doing some of these tests. Again, sort of reiterating the point of who is this really for? And also, you know, if they're not doing the test, why would you be sitting there up in a suite just waiting? Right. Especially when you're getting all of these numbers from their pro day, from the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Bowl, you're getting all of these numbers from these guys already. And you have all their tape. So I do think that was kind of reiterated, some of the practices and processes that they do within that specific context of how they're built and where they're picking. Other than that, like Rams related, I mean, it was really interesting. You know, they just won the Super Bowl and nobody really did a victory lap. I won't say his name. One of the assistant coaches did show up the first day in his Super Bowl issued sweatshirt and then like went and changed really quickly because was getting crap for it. so, big deal. You showed up to the combine wearing your Super Bowl issue sweatshirt, but then went and changed really quick. It was interesting that it seemed like the year had restarted so quickly after that, but so many questions still answered. But yeah, some staff stuff. I mean, man, Rich, this has been, they're moving and shuffling and hiring and all kinds of people in new spots.
Yeah, well, it's an annual tradition for the Rams to see how that shakes out. And I had people, you know, just to set the table here, like see people on Twitter sometimes, and I love you all, you know that. But, you know, getting upset like, oh, why are these guys leaving after a year? Like, why doesn't Sean McVay get guys who are going to stay for a few years? This is the game, and Sean McVay understands the game. He's been a part of the game himself. It's not about anybody being disloyal. boil. It's about like some of exactly what we've been talking about with the players. You want to put yourself in a good position, but you also have ambitions in your career, and there's a value in staying where you are and building, but there's a value in sometimes moving around. And certainly if you have the ability to move upward, you're not going to be hold yourself back artificially out of any loyalty to anybody. And then that's just the way that it goes. And Sean McVay, being a coach who got hired at 30 years old as a head coach, knows that as well as anybody. So let's not get that twisted as we start, you know, talking about this. It's just the way it goes. And the Rams and Sean McVay know that as well as anybody. But yeah, Jordan, some interesting moves here. I guess probably the highlight one is the shocking hire of Liam Cohen as offensive coordinator.
This is brand new information.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Phoebe Buffay quotes.
My goodness. I just completely out of left field. Could not have imagined that would happen. Also interesting, though, Greg Olsen coming back as an offensive assistant. Somebody who's, he's been with the Rams before, was actually a part of Jeff Fisher's staff, I believe. And so maybe adding a little bit different element there. Jordan, I don't want to go through all of these because literally there's like 10 of them here, but I just kind of want to throw it open to you. The running backs coach, a very interesting hire, Rashad Samples coming in to work with Thomas Brown shifting over to tight ends. What should we know about some of these moves, and do they say anything? Do they reflect anything about this staff or where the Rams want to go in 2022?
Yeah, when I got the text about Greg Olsen a couple of weeks ago, it really tripped me up because I covered tight end Greg Olsen in Carolina, and he's obviously retired and doing great things as a TV analyst. And I was like, wait, what? And then I saw that it was an O and not an E at the end. And I was like, oh, this matters. This is an important details, vowel change. Yes. Yeah, important vowel change. But yeah, so what is interesting with him and with Jake Peets, who's going to be doing some quality control stuff, is I got the sense that Zach Robinson was actually promoted a little bit. He was a assistant quarterbacks coach, and I think he's going to be taking a larger role alongside Liam Cohen. And Jake Peets and Greg Olsen, I think it's kind of interesting because they will have roles and they will have input and insight, obviously. But I know this is true for Peets. I think this is true for Greg Olsen, that both of their previous teams still, I think, owe them some back pay. Mm. And so it's almost like they're in almost fellowship roles with the Rams. I don't know really what word to call it. It's basically like, hey, we can add these guys and, you know, it's probably not going to cost us a ton of money, but we also want them around to see what they'll contribute. And they kind of want to have them in the building. And of course, you know, if you get a chance to be on Sean McVay's staff, I mean, most people in the world would probably take that opportunity if they were offered it.
I misspoke real quick. Greg Olsen was actually brought in by Sean McVay in 2017. I was mistaking. Chris Wehnke was the quarterbacks coach in 2016.
Oh, I haven't heard that name in a while.
I forgot
about
that one. Even more, obviously there's some familiarity there. And like you said, Jordan, if you can bring him in as another brain in the room and it's not going to cost you a lot of resources, then why not, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much. And so I kind of get, I don't know if fellowship's even the right word because it's a real position that they have and all of that. It's not like what Bonamigo was doing last year as like kind of just advising or whatever. It's not going to be that. Like, it's really going to be in, you know, an actual role, but it also was not, it's a bonus add, I think, in that regard, because it's not like, you know, this position was totally vacant and now you have to fill it. And this is your, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a value add. So that's interesting. The trio of hires that I find interesting too are the assistant coaches. And in one case, Joe DeCamillis, a special teams coordinator, who made their own hires for their assistants or for a different coach. So the big one here is Rashad Samples and Thomas Brown, who was moved to tight ends coach. He hired Rashad Samples. This is, yes, Sean McVay approves the hires, whatever, but this is specifically a Thomas Brown hire. And that's important. Eric Henderson also, who they were able to extend as D-line coach, which was absolutely crucial, I think, that they get that one done. He also made his own hire in Skylar Jones for his assistant. His last assistant that he hired is Marcus Dixon, who will now be the D-line coach for the Broncos. And so that is a little bit of a coaching tree to watch moving forward, because Eric Henderson does have an eye for talent, and Marcus Dixon certainly proves that. But back to and then DeCamillis hired Jeremy Springer. So the autonomy that these guys are having to hire their own guys, it's almost like if you can't or won't, and it's sometimes both, can't or won't promote people, whether you've run out of titles or you will not promote them. This is another way, I think, that we're going to start seeing with Sean to try to keep people around. There's all kinds of layers to that, I understand, but that is just my sense. What I think is really, really important about the Rashad Samples hire is even before, so we had our college staff was working on this and had given me a heads up, which was really nice of them to do. And so I'm there. I'm like around all these people who probably know this guy, right? So then you start asking, hey, have you heard of this guy? What's he all about? And just people just raved about him, like really kind of rare for someone who is relatively new to coaching and very young and is rising, you know, through the college, specifically college ranks, to hear that him be so well known and also raved about at the Combine, which is an NFL event. And so I thought that was really, really interesting. And to me, so every time a coach gets bigger interviews. So like Thomas Brown interviewed for the Vikings OC job, and he also interviewed for the Miami head coaching job. Anytime a coach is in those interviews, people ask them in the interviews, what staff would you put together? What would your plan for a staff look like? And so even as early on as that, you as a coach are looking around and figuring out who you want to take with you, who you might have a good shot at taking with you, and who are people who you can say and cite as like, this is a person who I would want to hire, or this person from within this philosophical structure is a person that I would want to hire because he would bring this and this. And you're already doing that. So to me, the fact that Thomas Brown specifically hired this guy, Rashad Samples, was at SMU and TCU most recently, tells me that we might be on the lookout not only for his talent, his ability, and how he'll manage this running backs room, which faces a lot of questions this year, but also his pairing specifically with Thomas Brown, because Thomas Brown has a big future in this league, and it's an absolute fact. And if things don't happen for him, we all, you know, I think reflects incredibly poorly on the league itself. Yeah. But as it stands, things in a vacuum, Thomas Brown has a big future in this league, and a lot of people know it, and a lot of people at the Combine were talking about it. And so I think that his specific hiring of Rashad Samples does point toward maybe that sort of pairing that would be a longer term partnership happening in the future, which I think is very good for the Rams in the short term or even the medium term, because if this is a guy who would demand that sort of notice, you definitely want him on your staff. And so I think that part was really, really interesting.
What a fascinating thing, Jordan. I'm not sure this had ever occurred to me too, but it's almost like you talk about the Sean McVay coaching tree, right? But it's almost like empowering your assistant coaches to start developing their own little tree within a tree, little branches on the within the same tree, right? And you're right. And I think it speaks to the point we started out here is like, you have to expect if you're doing this right, you're going to lose guys. And that's, I know it's frustrating for fans to see, and you know, you don't want to be changing coordinators all the time, changing position coaches, but like the alternative is your team sucks and your coaching staff sucks and you're not, you know, your guys aren't being valued at all. And you don't want that either. So I think what the ideal there is to set up, you're almost setting up this like farm system within your staff to where these guys are either going to grow up and take on positions in your staff, or they're going to know that they can grow and, like you said, jump when Thomas Brown eventually, if he does, you know, jump to another team, then hey, he's going to take Rashad with him, and you know, he's going to be a guy who can thrive on another team. It's just the way that it works, and it's you want that healthy feeling within your group. I mean, the thing that you have to watch out for, and there was an interesting one, Jordan, you mentioned it in your column today, that it looks like there's a possibility that I want to word this the right way. I don't want my words to get parsed either, but Chris Shula may, I'm reading exactly what you wrote. Chris Shula may move to a defensive backs coaching role alongside Jonathan Cooley, which is interesting in that Shula has not previously coached the position, and Cooley was blocked from joining Kevin O'Connell's staff in Minnesota. Look, let me be very clear. I'm not putting words in anybody's mouth, and I'm not going to present it as though anybody's upset or anything like that. But that's the kind of thing you need to look out for, is if you develop a reputation for doing that and not allowing your guys not only to get moved up within your staff, but then you're blocking them from potentially, you know, making a lateral move that will allow them to rise quicker somewhere else. That's the kind of thing you got to watch out for. That's more harmful in your long term than it is, you know, losing a position coach every year. So I will end it by saying I don't know any of the particulars of that situation, but I'm just saying in general, that's the kind of thing you need to look out for when you're doing what they're doing with some of these other guys like Thomas Brown, Eric Henderson, saying, hey, we're going to empower you more. We're going to let you pick the people who you're working with. We're going to let you start to develop your own little tree there, your own little shrub, I guess we could call it. That's a good thing. That's a healthy thing within your organization that I think you want to foster. So very interesting. And I wonder how much that happens around the league, if at all, because it sounds like a pretty smart thing to do.
Yeah. And it's a good question that you posed. It would probably make for a good story, honestly, is to see that and how that process kind of came about. Because again, sometimes what we've talked about with McVay in the past is like, sometimes you can help these guys leaving, sometimes you can't. And right. And so in the ways that you can help, what are the leverages that you're able to exercise as a head coach? You kind of saw it last year. Thomas Brown was getting a lot of interest from college teams and everything last year. And you know, you saw the title changes. A lot of these guys on the staff who did stay, you saw the title changes. And sometimes that's, I think, the more traditionalist way to either get a guy a bonus or to give him another title, which would imply more responsibilities and should translate into more responsibilities. But in the actual physical, what else can you do, not just to keep a guy around, but to also that is a value add for the team itself in the immediate term? And I think this is a solution. I think this is an answer, because you want those guys, you want those talented guys, but you also want to make sure that that your coaches are receiving the benefits that you have promised them if they stick around. Right. And so I think that is really, really important. And it is interesting because they manifest like the Sean McVay coaching tree and all of its sort of little undergrowth essentially is kind of like what's happening here. Like it's really, really interesting. I think it absolutely makes the team stronger to do it this way. Yeah. And it widens the pool of coaches that you are introduced to and interact with. And I think that's also important too.
Yeah. Wow. Gosh, such a fascinating.
I know. Isn't that interesting? I was like, damn, yeah. I should write about that.
There you go. Yeah. Get on that before anybody else steals your idea.
No, they'll just aggregate it out of
aggregate
context.
Aggregate it. Yeah. Yes. Rodriguez said this has never been tried before anywhere in the NFL.
I was like on taking a walk this morning and I was like, I did not say this. Yeah, I'm looking at my phone. I was like, what is happening right now?
Yeah. Reading is hard sometimes, Jordan.
It's a Monday. It's Monday for everyone. I'm sure it was an honest mistake. It's Monday for everyone.
Well, it's good to be back with everybody. And we should say we're going to have a bonus episode.
Yeah.
Do you want to share a little bit about that? We probably don't want to give too much away, but
I won't give too much away, but we're going to have two guests on this week for a special bonus episode of 11 Personnel. And we're going to be talking about a book that I am a huge fan of that these two people co-wrote and is a fascinating snippet football history and also Los Angeles football history that I would bet many are not aware of, that I certainly was not aware of before reading this book. And I am so, so excited to that we get to share this with you guys and that it's a bonus episode after we took our little hiatus. So really, really looking forward to that. We're going to be doing that on Thursday. So you guys know to keep an eye out for it. We'll be sharing out lots of information and lots of context. And in the meantime, it's definitely something to look forward to.
Yeah, really looking forward. And a part of football history that I really wasn't that familiar with either, of even though I've lived here my whole life. So I'm really excited to dive into that. And then we'll be back. As Jordan said, the wheel never stops spinning in
Greg
the NFL.
Gaines never stops moving.
Yeah. Jordan, cover your ears on this. But the free agency period opens on March 16th. So we will be back shortly to cover all of that. I'm sure there'll be a lot of Rams news in the interim, and we'll see where they are once those floodgates open and free agency begins. But Jordan, fantastic run continues for you. Just amazing coverage at the combine, and like I said, everybody should go check out this latest column. Goes into even more detail on some of the stuff that we've been talking about, and of course you should follow along every day with Jordan on Twitter at Jordan Rodrigue. You can follow me at Rich_Hammond. I don't have a lot to talk about these days. There's no uniform. Oh, we're going to get a new uniform at some point.
Yes, I was going to say, yes, you will, my friend. You're going to
I can't wait. Is it going to be yellow? Is it going to be black? Is it going to be white and blue? What's it going to be, everybody? I can't wait to see. And of course, if you are a subscriber to The Athletic, thank you very much. We do appreciate you. If you're not already a subscriber, boy, do we have good news for you. Because you can go right now to theathletic.com/11personnel, join, get all of Jordan's great coverage, all of our great coverage at The Athletic, and you can get Jordan's favorite thing in the entire world, which is what?
A great discount. You guys, a great discount. My favorite thing in the world. We're doing it again. Yeah, it's still going. We still haven't been found out, so it's pretty great. And anytime you subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast, you can get my favorite thing in the world, which is a great discount every single time. And we appreciate you guys. We got to teach a class or a seminar in person. 11 Personnel was in person this last week, which was really cool, finally getting to see Rich. And it just made us really excited and also feel racked with guilt that we had not released an episode for the 2 weeks previously. So hopefully you guys will get your fill this week with two episodes. Do not forget to look for us again on Thursday. And as always, we really appreciate you guys tuning in. And it is going to be another fun and probably darkly chaotic year. You can't wait.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.